So here we are, and we are back with the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. I'm your host, Steve McBain. We're here in Singapore again, and I have with me pod regular Mr. Drew O'Donnell. Drew, how are you?
Very good, mate. Very good. Glad to be back. Second time in a row. That's fantastic.
Keeping up with your New Year's resolutions?
Keeping fit, yes, very much so, but I'm struggling with the no drinking rule.
And looking resplendent in overalls today.
Mate, I've tried to make the effort and sort of came in a suit.
Just in case he forgets who he is. Now, making his first pod of the year, Mr. Jeremy Searle. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Steve. Good to see you in London at Christmas time and a Happy New Year.
Indeed, mate. It was a very good and wholesome family time. Not so wholesome with Spurs' result last night against Leicester, but we'll get to that a bit later. And Mr. Tom Warren. Tom, how are you?
Excellent, thank you very much. All good here.
Okay, so we've got a really busy show this week. We've got some midweek games to review. We got our usual discussion, a preview of the weekend, and the quiz is back. It was delinquent last week. It came late back from its holidays, but it's back with a bang. So anyway, in part one, we'll just kick off with some of the week's news. Biggest transfer of the week, probably Jonjo Shelvey. Drew, a little bit odd that Swansea are selling, you know, one of their better players to a relegation rival.
Very much so, but I mean, I think he's obviously had a bit of a run-in with the manager, and he's basically came on. I think he had 12, one of the stats of the weekend was he had about 12 shots and none on target.
I mean, Alan Shearer was, I mean, obviously a big Newcastle fan, but he was sort of questioning, you know, Shelvey's attitude and said that he had a lot to prove at Newcastle. Tom, do you think he can make a difference for them?
Yeah, definitely. I think if he's working with Steve McLaren, who I think he knows from before. So I think hopefully that manager, you know, maybe he needs the type of player that needs the arm around the shoulder to bring him on and hopefully get him into line. We know he's had problems with his attitude before and also his diet as well.
So he did bring in a chef last year.
He obviously
didn't need to bring in a hairdresser, so maybe maybe the chef does a bit of his hairdressing as well.
He does have alopecia, I'll give him that one.
And in other big transfer news, Stephen Caulker joins Liverpool, but they could probably do worse, and a good move for him at this point in his career, even if it is on loan. Now, Jeremy, the Ballon d'Or this week.
Just going on transfer, Steve, I'd like to say, I mean, we talked about relegation battle this season, who's going to be in it. I see Bournemouth are starting to look into stay up. They've bought three players already. I can't say I know them all.
All attackers, yeah?
Yeah. Making some signings to try and make sure they stay in the Premier League, which is unlike the clubs below them, it seems.
It does seem very quiet so far, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's why I was moving on to the Ballon d'Or.
I read a mini article that Bale had actually wrote, and he's very happy at Real, so that means he's putting a transfer request.
I have no idea why everyone keeps writing these stories that Gareth Bale has come at the Premiership. The guy has done nothing but make it clear that he wants to be at Real Madrid. This is the club he's always dreamed of playing for. Ronaldo's, you know, if you know, he's probably slightly past his peak now. He'll be on his way eventually. I mean, why on earth would the guy want to leave? I don't know what he's at the biggest club in the world.
He's settled down there pretty well. I mean, he's tried to learn Spanish out there as well, so he's trying to make it his
home. And English are here as well.
Yeah, I think so.
And then there's, what I always think is with Bale is, I think he's a bit injury prone, as we discussed last week, and I think it's a risk. He needs a full good season before anyone will come in for him, although I'd like to see him sort of move back to the Premiership.
Well, the FIFA Pro team was full of players from La Liga, with just a little sort of sneaky representation from Juventus. I mean, Jeremy, do you think Messi was a worthy winner?
To be honest with you, Steve, I don't really watch the Liga that much, but I think, from reading about how he plays, the goals he scores, how he influences games, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's as you look back, the last 8 years have been two winners, and one's Ronaldo and one's Messi, the two best players in the world at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see the tactical voting that took place. I mean, some of this just seems absolutely, you know, nonsensical. But
I mean, I'm not a fan of the Ballon d'Or. It basically is just a popularity contest. If you look at who Messi votes for and you look who Ronaldo votes for, Ronaldo voted for everybody from Real Madrid. It is purely a popularity contest. The Pakistani head coach, he voted for Ian Robin. So, you know, it shows
Ian Robin did have a a good season about 2013.
It's just a popularity contest. It should be scrapped, I think, personally, the Ballon d'Or.
No, but I think, I mean, going on your fashion sort of expertise from last week, at one year I do remember Messi wearing a purple jacket.
Oh, great outfit.
Yeah, he has had some rascal outfits, but I must admit, Paul Pogba's get-up took a little bit of beating this week.
Going on to Messi, I actually thought he was injured for most of last season, or he wasn't really playing that well. But then all of a sudden, you look at what he did. It was 52 goals in 61 games, and a goal every 80 minutes.
Hard to disagree. I would like to see a bit.
I mean,
more,
Ronaldo had better stats, but
I would like to see a bit more defensive representation. But anyway, we're going to talk a bit more about World Player of the Year in part two. Now, Aston Villa recorded a shock win midweek. Finally,
come on, the villains.
Finally got 3 points on the board. But I mean, guys, I mean, if you look at their, you know, their points tally and where they are on the table, I mean, it looks pretty much done and dusted. I mean, if you were Randy Lerner, what would you do now? Would you gamble and maybe try and spend 20, 30 million to try and attract the players that will keep you up, or do you say, look, we're done and let's start planning for life in the Championship?
Well, there is the old adage, if it's not broke, don't fix it, and they've just won, so maybe you don't go for it. But one of the criticisms from Sherwood and the buying policy at Villa from the beginning of the season was they bought too many attackers and then too many right-sided attackers and not enough balance in the team. So in order to generate the balance, they do need to maybe put a little bit more midfielders in.
I mean, the defence seems to be the absolute Achilles heel. I mean, everyone...
Richards and, you know, an ex-England player.
Lescott.
You know,
Hutton's terrible.
Listen, back off. Back off. Back off. Rangers, back off, Tom, and your fashion.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at Aston Villa, what sort of players can you attract? You're rooted to the foot of the Premiership, right? The players you need, experienced players. The only guys you're going to get are guys who aren't being offered jobs in China, in the States for the money.
Middle East.
So they're going to come to Villa as it's their last shot playing the Premier League. And I don't think those guys can be enough to keep you up.
Do a QPR
but
and
then
buy
planning for the Championship just says you've got no ambition as a club.
Yeah, true.
So you're screwed either way. I think it's very difficult for them to decide what to do. They've spent no money so far. Bournemouth are spending. Aston Villa haven't been mentioned at all in any of the transfer rumours so far.
But they've been trying to get rid of players. I remember a Bondahor was meant to be going, or at least rumoured to go, and I don't really see many offers coming in for him.
I mean, they're going to have a big wage bill of a club that size. Yes. They're going to be in a financially, if they go down.
I watched punting some of the things on Syntel and Mio and all that. I watched Villa when Graham Taylor was involved.
Yep.
And the amount of sort of like get Leonard out and blah 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 back then, and it's still going on today. You know.
Yeah, I mean it is a pretty sorry tale for Villa and their fans, and my own feeling is it's only going to end one way. As I say, they did, however, pick up a nice little victory in midweek against Crystal Palace, which was very welcome for them. Palace's form is not the best at the moment, and I think without a win in four, they need to pick themselves up. But just looking at the midweek fixtures, at the bottom of the table, a cracking win for Sunderland, Tom. Jermaine Defoe doing what he does best, 3 goals.
Yes, but that was some shocking refereeing in that game. The referee is one of his first games in charge, I think, and maybe his fourth Premier League game. He got loads of decisions wrong. I think four decisions wrong. Two offsides for what, two of the goals.
Yeah, but did it not even itself out?
But that's the linesman that needs to get the decision.
But that was never a red card either for the Swansea guy. That was never a red card. He won the ball clearly. To me, it was just purely bad refereeing, although Big Sam does have a wonder touch of getting people out of trouble.
And you do like his fashion sense, Big Sam.
No. It's all about Paul Tisdale.
Well, they've got a tough fixture on Saturday, but I mean, you know, they've two wins on the bounce is absolute gold dust, at this point. One team that can't win at home is my team, Chelsea. Another disappointing 2-2 draw with West Brom, following on from the last home game, which was 2-2 with Watford. Guys, is that really the end of any sort of lingering hopes for European football for Chelsea?
I don't think it's the end of their hopes, but I do think it's beginning to balance out where they actually are in the league, because they are looking like a mid-table team.
I mean, they're now drawing games rather than losing them, but there's still only two wins in the last six.
Well, as you used to like to point out to me, Steve, you can also get in the Europa League.
Well, I think the but that's what I said. Into Europe. I mean, I'm that's what I'm referring to. I mean, you know, I think the FA Cup probably is Chelsea's best chance. But you look at them, if they'd won last night, that would have taken them on to 26 points. You know, only 6 points behind the likes of Stoke.
Well, they are still in Europe at the moment, are they not?
Yeah, I mean, but they're not going to win the Champions League, so...
Well, they said that when
Di Matteo...
Yeah, but I think the big difference between that Chelsea team and this Chelsea team is character. That Chelsea team still had Petr Cech, who I think is at the moment certainly a far stronger character than Courtois. You still had Frank Lampard, John Terry, and obviously, Didier Drogba. So, you know, some big characters in there, and at the moment I just don't see that. Anyway, I think the best game of last night was at Anfield, 3-3 draw played out between Liverpool and Arsenal. Tom, you sat up and watched this one?
Yes, set my alarm nice and early to watch this one. What a great, entertaining game of football to watch.
Cracking second goal by Firmino.
Even Wenger said it was fantastic night of football.
Giroud missed an absolute sitter that I think anybody
around this... Well, it was from the sublime to the ridiculous. It was like the miss of the season, and then the second goal he scored was absolutely Rolls-Royce.
It was a wonderful game, and good old English winter weather, so we can say that a lot of these players can now do it on a wet, cold, windy night in the north of
England. But given the results around them, is this with a late equaliser from Liverpool, is this a point gain for Arsenal or two lost?
I genuinely think Wenger would be happy with a point. I know they were winning.
I heard him interviewed and he sounded pretty happy with
I think at the end of the day is when you consider that all the main rivals either drew or lost, apart from Leicester, he was on a win-win situation. But the thing is, more midweek games, 34 goals, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I think as well for Liverpool, they'll take heart from this and they'll fancy their chances against United on Sunday. Now, Jeremy, what went wrong at White Hart Lane?
Well,
Spurs are still Spurs.
We scraped a draw in the cup against Leicester the weekend. I honestly thought we were concentrating the league, would beat them on Wednesday. Obviously I was wrong, but this is great for the Foxes. It shows they are proper championship potential. Spurs, as usual.
Championship, well, as in Aston Villa championship potential?
We're the Premier League potential.
I did see a great tweet from Robert Huth afterwards that says having a square head comes in well occasionally.
Well, they'll take them anywhere you can get them. I mean, Jeremy, it looks like it's the draws that are killing Spurs this year, right? It's nine draws already. Only Everton have got more draws with 10.
We're still fourth, so there's still a chance. I mean, still a chance we can stay fourth, maybe get third. Definitely not going to win the league this year.
Yeah, you've got to keep an eye on West Ham, I think. And I mean, guys, I mean, Drew, Newcastle 3, United 3. I mean, where does this leave both managers? I mean, another exciting game. I mean, the United fans getting the excitement they crave, but I mean.
Well, I mean, when you look at Newcastle over the last sort of four or five games had been losing 1-0. Luck going against them. All of a sudden they turn up to Man U, who, you know, weren't really scoring a lot of goals. So this had a sort of like 0-0, 0-1.
Yeah, but then you also forgot that Newcastle United on TV, mate. We all know what happens then. So.
Yes, but I mean, that is actually
disgraceful, isn't it?
How many Newcastle games, you know, back in the heyday when the 90s and 80s, when Keegan was in charge, was the 3-3 games with Liverpool, with Man U?
4-4 even, wasn't it?
4-4,
yeah.
5-3.
Yeah. So, I mean, these were great days, but... The problem is with McLaren is Sunderland winning and jumping above them in the league. I mean, as far as Van Gaal goes, you know, I hate to say it because I do believe he's a very good manager. I believe his style of football is conducive to good teams. He's just not attacking enough for good football and for Adidas. And for Man U to be 2-0 up at home... and then end up sort of drawing 3-2.
I think the problem is as well for clubs like, you know, Newcastle and Sunderland is that but what's very hard for clubs like Newcastle is you know, they get a point at home to United, which on the face of it is not a bad thing. And then they've got, next up, they've got West Ham United. Now, normally that's a fixture they would be targeting to win. But, you know, West Ham are going to go into that game, you know, I would have thought, you know, I would have them as favourites. I'm just looking down here and apparently they're not, but I mean...
I mean, I would have West Ham as favourites away from home. They've gone away from home and beaten a lot of teams this season.
2-1, it says here.
Yeah, but they've beaten a lot of the big boys away from home this season. And they've got Payet back, who is a wonderful, wonderful...
And also, and Andy Carroll's injured, so that's another plus point for them.
Yeah,
so.
Out for another couple of months, probably.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. All right, OK, well, as I say, it's been some very, very interesting results, and I think a very, very welcome win for Southampton as well, who were just in danger of maybe getting sucked down towards the bottom. But important 3 points for them. But that'll take us to the end of part one, and we'll be right back with you in part two. So here we are back with part two of the Beyond the 90 podcast. You can of course catch us on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, on Audio Boom, and of course you can get all your latest Premiership news and views at www.oneshotfootball.com. Now, in part two, as is traditional, we have a roundtable discussion. And in light of the Ballon d'Or this week, and also Lionel Messi winning an unprecedented fifth Ballon d'Or, we want to discuss who is the greatest player ever. Now, just to sort of set some sort of criteria here, or maybe some background, I had a really interesting discussion on baseball about this, and one of the theories put forward is that the greatest ever player in your eyes is who was the greatest player in that sport when you were 12 years old, because that's at your optimum time for appreciating, starting to appreciate football, but yet romancing things as you sort of get nostalgic as you get older, which kind of would explain why for me, when I was a 13-year-old watching Diego Maradona rip England apart at the 1986 World Cup, Maradona remains for me the greatest ever. But at the same time, I remember the 82 and the 86 World Cups very fondly. Probably my favourite player of all time, if I don't think he's the best, is Socrates. There was Michael Laudrup at that time. So you tend to romanticise these things. I don't particularly care for watching Cristiano Ronaldo, but his stats are compelling. But Messi's obviously easy on the eye. But guys, I mean, can you really, Jeremy, compare across eras? I mean, there's just so many great names.
I don't think you can compare like the players today to the players of 50 years ago. I think you've got to look at football as more each decade. Whereas, I mean, with rule changes, changing style of play, you know, the game developing, equipment developing, you've got to pick a decade and pick the best player from that decade and compare this. But, I mean, a guy who won the Ballon d'Or in the 60s, you can't compare to a guy who's just like Lionel Messi. Completely different era of football.
I guess the thing with Messi, I think what sort of makes me think that he really does come into this discussion is it's not just the stats. I mean, if you look at him just purely on goals, I think by the time he's finished, there'll have never been a goal scorer like him. But it's his influence on games as well. You know, the fact that, you know, he's a playmaker as well. There's just so many other different things he does.
I agree, Steve. But if you go back to play in the 70s, when tackling was a lot fiercer, there's a lot more physical 60s. Game, would he have been as
I mean,
players?
Absolutely. I mean, there's When you look at, you know, we're just discussing Maradona. I mean, if you'd ruled out the tackle from behind, there's a wonderful piece you can get on YouTube, which is Maradona against Italy, World Cup 82. Just the single fouls on Maradona in that game. You'd have had, they would have had to abandon the game because so many players would have been sent off.
I mean, if you look at it, I mean, sort of subs weren't even introduced until the 60s. And if you look at it statistically, Pele was voted the best player of the century from statistic, and his goals against games ratio, 1,200 and 1,300 odd games, is phenomenal in any league, even though he only played with Santos. Yeah. And they voted him the best player of the league. But that was purely, that was one guy with one club, really. If you look at Maradona, and that's who, in my opinion, is the best player, purely because he went to unfancy club, average clubs. He took Argentina in 86, a good team, to the World Cup and won it. He took Argentina in 90, a bad team, to the World Cup final. And that's a guy who single-handedly, in more way, won in 1986, sort of won major competition with good teams.
Yeah.
And what he did with Napoli, and to an extent Barcelona in the 80s, is phenomenal. What Messi's never done, is he's never taken a good team to greatness. Yeah. He's taken great teams to greatness, but not a good team to greatness. And that's the difference in my mind where Maradona steps up, as well as the tackling. But I would like to say, Chopper Harris's tackle on George Best in one of them YouTube games is horrendous. And he used to play for Chelsea, I believe, at one point.
Well, Chelsea legend. To say, though, if you're going to be considered the world's greatest player, you have to exclude Maradona straight away, because what he was like as a human being.
Okay.
If you're going to be considered a greatest player, you look at what the kids role look models. Up to.
Role models. I don't subscribe to this thing as footballers as role models at all.
I think you do know, because you look at now, especially the young days, you see what kids look up to, and kids do go on, they do emulate stuff that they see.
Well, Manchester United have consistently voted Cantona their greatest ever player.
But then again, Tom, you're looking like, you know, you have a day of age where you have like
Eras,
Twitter and everything. Yeah. So everything in your life is publicised, you know, 24/7.
Yeah.
Whereas you go back 30 years, it wasn't. You don't know what these guys got to.
And
you
also, George Best was not.
But you also look at what was happening at the time. Was in the 70s when George Best was sort of coming around. It was all pop stars and, you know, fantasy. So it was fantastic. That's what they wanted footballers to be. In the 80s, they had a lot of sort of like the, for want of a better word, cocaine and various other, and partying and going out. And that's what Maradona was. He brought controversy, which put football at the front. Perhaps if Maradona was playing today, his whole attitude would be completely different, same as George Best. But you just never know, because the eras that they're brought up in.
So, I mean, obviously,
as Jeremy said.
But I mean, the guys that typically come into this discussion are, well, you have Messi and Ronaldo from the current era, and then I would guess you have Maradona and Pele, and then the other guy who everyone always talks about is the great Real Madrid Di Stefano.
Di Stefano,
if you ask a certain generation of Spanish, you know, people who follow a lot of Spanish, they just say there's nothing to even talk about. They say he was head and shoulders. But you have this sort of group below, which is kind of like, I guess, Cruyff, Beckenbauer, maybe even Platini, Zidane.
Best in the
Zidane,
best.
Dennis Law. Let's not forget Dennis Law.
It's hard with Best, because the problem with Best is that his career was sort of, the genius was there, but it was almost so fleeting.
Yeah, 3 years or something.
And, you know, I mean, at his time, he was this maverick genius. I think Gascoigne, if he hadn't had the injuries, probably may have been part of this discussion.
Yeah.
But I mean, is there anyone else we think is worthy of
thrown into the mix? I mean,
Luis Suarez
from the 50s, the one that won the Ballon d'Or in 60,
yeah,
and in 60 in Barcelona.
Luis Suarez is, though, I mean, he's a few problems, obviously, mentally, but an outstanding player. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, I don't think he comes into the category for greatest ever.
I mean, one of the things that I did, I read a few weeks back, and I raised, was that of the monthly Spanish league winners for Player of the Month, only one Barcelona player has ever won it, which was Suarez. I mean, and that's amazing when you consider that for the last sort of 5 or 10 years, Iniesta, Xavi,
just staying on the topic of the greatest ever. I mean, two of the players that we mentioned are, you know, Beckenbauer and Cruyff. I mean, one of the reasons I think they're worthy of mention is that Beckenbauer changed the perception of what a central defender could
absolutely
be, how
yeah
they could play. It was taken on by the great Franco Baresi, but, you know, Beckenbauer really changed the definition of that role. And Cruyff, I think, was the fulcrum of that total
football
Dutch team. He epitomised everything that they
the
stood
playmaker
for.
And
you know, I mean, he was. I don't know how much of Cruyff you've watched, but it's absurd some of the things he used to do.
I watched him more for Holland in the World Cups, but I'd just like to say, like, looking a bit forward, I'd like to mention Harry Kane in 5 years' time being discussed.
What's gone off the rails and followed the path of Maradona?
I thought Luis Suarez was scraping the barrel.
Going back to Cruyff and Beckenbauer, I mean, those guys shared the Ballon d'Or between them, I think, five times during the 70s. And as you said, he's the only defensive player who's won it.
No,
Cannavaro.
And then there was the Russian.
And also European Football of the Year, I think Matthias Sammer. Yeah. Won that, because you've got to remember that this was originally was European Football of the Year.
Yeah,
and then they started the
Ballon d'Or came in 91, I think. Ballon d'Or started.
No, 56 was the original Ballon d'Or, but it was only European based players.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, the discussion is endless, and there's no right or wrong answer. While we're just sort of rounding up the discussion in the next few minutes, why don't you think each of you of your top three players
in the world ever.
Yeah. Who would be your personal three? And, I mean, just, you know, in the context of this, how much do you think it... Do you think it actually is better or worse for these guys to be in a great team? For instance, you're saying about Messi, how he, you know, has never done it in a, you know, in a limited team. He hasn't taken a team to greatness. And it's a little bit like, for instance, if you go to Formula One, you can be the best driver and the best car, but, you know, they said the challenge for Schumacher was to go to Ferrari and bring Ferrari back to where they were. And they said with Lewis Hamilton, you know, when he left McLaren, can you go and do it in another team? They're the... It seems to be more about dragging teams up. I mean, do we think it reflects better or worse in guys to be part of a great team, or...
I think it's easier to win trophies as far as individual trophies to be part of a great team. But in order for greatness, you need to actually do it with very mediocre.
But I mean, for instance, you take a player, and he's not in this league, but you take one of, you know, England's most talented players of the last 20 years, Matt Le Tissier. Would he have it anything like the adulation or attention that he had if he'd been playing for Liverpool or Manchester United?
He should have signed for Scotland when he had the chance under the Channel League's treaty. That's all I can say. And then he would have went on to greatness.
All right, okay, well, let's kick off with you, Jeremy, in reverse order. Your top three players of all time.
I'll start the other way around. Maradona is my most favourite player of all time. Even though the hand of God really annoyed me at the time when I was younger, watching him play, yeah, he's my best player of all time. As you said, Johan Cruyff from the 70s and 80s, again, another player I grew up with watching in the international matches, another great player. And the other player I used to like to watch, which might be the greatest, I don't know, Zidane. I used to watch him. I thought he was an awesome player.
Yeah, he's in my top three. So.
Yeah, great shout. I mean, I go slightly from my slightly younger generation. I think Zidane's an amazing player. I think he contributed all over the pitch. I mean, you can look at, you know, the way that attacking players tend to win all the adulation from everybody and a lot of all the awards, but Zidane, he crafted all
that. I mean, it's amazing at Real Madrid, you ask them which order they have their greatest players in, and Di Stefano is head and shoulders, I think, still, and then they'd all nearly all have Zidane above Ronaldo for all the goals.
Yeah, definitely Zidane. And then I really enjoyed Gascoigne when he played as well, and just as well, the character and the emotion that he showed, you know, on the pitch that he did actually.
I can't stand players crying.
And then my third one, Maldini. I really think Maldini, as a failed defender myself, just his work rate, the engine that he had to go up and down the pitch for 90 minutes, and the years that he played, you know, he's just a
I think the way is where he just moved inside a centre back and just didn't even blink.
And he looked fantastic in a suit.
Yeah, great hair.
I've no idea why he managed to look so good considering what his dad looks like. He must have had one hell of a mother. Okay, but anyway, your greatest player ever?
Zidane,
okay, all right. Drew?
For me, I would, you know, go with someone who we mentioned earlier, a bit fleeting, was George Best in third. I think, you know, some of the horrendous tackles that kid got growing up was unbelievable, and the amount of skill that he had. That time when he knocked the ball out of, who was the England keeper in the World Cup?
Chilton.
No, in 1966.
Banks.
When he knocked it, when Banks went to kick the ball out, and he just flicked it past him and then tapped it in, and the referee blew for a free kick, but no one really understood why he was blowing for the free kick. You know, that was a guy who was sort of like trying to push the envelope then. I think in second, without doubt, is Pele, purely because of the stats. To win three World Cups, only club. His first hat-trick was at 17. 17 against France in the World Cup final. You know, that was his first hat-trick. His goal wrote 78 goals in international, 1,300 goals.
No one's even mentioned Garrincha.
And, you know, and you just look at him and you just think, and as a role model, phenomenal. So you cannot argue with the stats, but number one without doubt is Maradona. Average teams making them great. His stats was, you know, arguably okay. But that left peg. I mean, if he had a right peg, he would have been winning Ballon d'Ors all over the place.
Yeah, I think it's a good shot. I think for myself, I've sort of excluded Di Stefano because I just simply haven't seen anything like enough of him. And also with Pele, I've seen bits of the 70 World Cup, and I haven't seen enough of him consistently. So my three in reverse order would be Zidane, and I would take Messi because I just think he's a joy to watch. And I think once he goes, everyone's going to realise that there's this gaping hole in the football world where he's been. Number one would be Maradona. But as I say, it's a discussion that will rumble on eternally, and we'll keep bar owners very happy the world over. But anyway, we will leave it there, and you can make your own minds up. That'll take us to the end of part two, and we'll be back with the weekend preview in part three and the quiz, and I can't wait. Okay, and so here we are back with part three of the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. And as is usual, we're going to preview some of the more interesting weekend games. And we're going to kick off with Bournemouth Norwich, you know, which looks like a bit of a relegation six-pointer, or at least if one of these teams can muster a win, that really does take them away from immediate danger. Jeremy, you were discussing off-air some of the transfers coming into Bournemouth. Fancy them to win this one?
I fancy this to be a draw, actually. I mean, like Bournemouth 16th, Norwich 15th. I know Norwich won the last game 3-1 at Carrow Road. I just fancy this to be a draw. I don't think any team has a big advantage here.
Okay, all right. Tom?
I'm going for a home win. I think obviously Norwich lost quite badly last night at Stoke. I know they had a player sent off early doors, so their players have probably done a bit harder work. And they've got a regroup ready for Saturday. So I think it'll be a comfortable home win with some the new signing, the striker, Abobi from Wolves. They paid 12 million for. He actually started.
Do we know much about him? Or?
He's been doing really well in the Championship. Really strong, and he's a strong young kid. Doing well. Oh, sorry, 10 million, not 12. But he looked really good. His work rate was really good for someone that had hardly trained with the team when they played against West Ham the other night, which is a tough team to play against. I think they'll easily turn Norwich over. I think about 2-0.
Okay, I would tend to agree with you. I do like Alex Neil, but I just think this Norwich team is a bit short of quality. If they stay up, it's going to be by the skin of their teeth, I think. Drew?
I'm going to go with Bournemouth. Very similar. I think Bournemouth are beginning to sort of show a little bit more form. And I reckon Norwich are going to come off the rails.
Well, goal scoring's been the problem, right? And it looks like they've addressed that. I mean, not all Championship strikers are necessarily a success, but at least they're trying. I mean, when do they have some of their bigger players back from injury?
I mean, most of their players are out for most of the season. Yes. You know, the three big signings they made, Tyrone Mings in the defence, he's out for the season, did a ligament in his knee. Gradle, the winger that was flying, he did a ligament, he's out for most of the season, I think. May come back for the last month. And then the guy who's still their highest scorer, Cameron, I forget his surname, he got the hat trick. He's
Wilson?
Out for the season. Yeah, Cameron Wilson, yeah. He did his ligament.
That was a shame because he was playing. They had that. Remember that madcap game at West Ham, remember?
Yeah,
he
yeah.
scored a hat trick.
So, yeah, it's a shame. So, I think most of their players are everything. But I really like Eddie Howe, so I really hope that they do
okay.
kick on and do
all
well.
Right. Well, three home wins and a draw, so it looks like. Bournemouth are favourites for that, and they're odds on, I think, with the bookies. Now, Chelsea-Everton. Everton dug in and got a creditable draw against Manchester City. I think John Stones was a little bit fortunate towards the end with a tackle that he really didn't need to make, but nevertheless, they got a good point there. I mean, Chelsea don't seem to be able to win at home. Everton going to fancy the chances here, are they, Jeremy?
I don't know, Steve, to be honest with you. I don't think Everton...
Thanks for coming, mate.
No, I...
That's why you get paid big bucks, mate.
I look at Chelsea and, I mean, their form is pretty average at the moment. Draw with West Brom at home, West Brom a bad team. 2-2 draw. Everton aren't a great team. They're 11th in the table, a few points above Chelsea.
I mean, Chelsea's 2 wins in 6. I mean, I was there for both of them. Maybe I need to get on a plane.
Yeah.
I think a home win for Chelsea. I mean, Everton can't defend very well. That was a surprise to me that it was a goalless draw last night for them at Manchester City. I think it should be a comfortable home win for Chelsea, really, by 1 or 2. Chelsea will concede, but I think they'll get over the line 2 or 3-1.
It really pains me because regular listeners will know exactly what I think of Roberto Martinez, and I'm already getting agitated, but I just think Everton are going to win this one. I think Lukaku's going to be well up for it again, just to show Chelsea what they're missing. Defensively, he's the last kind of player they want, you know, to be coming up against pace and power.
And
I fancy Everton to win this. I'm taking Everton to win this 1-2-1, unfortunately.
I mean, I would agree with Steve there. I think if Everton, I've always, or historically over the last few years, been a bit of Chelsea's bogey team. And
yeah, they had some tough games from them, you're right.
And the last game, I think, was 3-0, Everton. A young Scottish striker called Stephen Naismith actually banged in the perfect hat trick, as they say.
Everton look a huge price here.
That's maybe good money. Maybe good money. I mean, I reckon Everton don't really lose very many lately. They're just churning out results, maybe not setting the header on fire. But I think Lukaku is on fire at the moment, and I reckon if Chelsea don't perform, they're going to get beat comfortably. I reckon 2-0.
The only thing with Lukaku is I think he's falling away energy-wise. What he's got in the tanks, coming off the back of a busy Christmas period.
That is relative to Cahill and Terry, though.
Yeah, from a keen fantasy football manager point of view, he's not been doing the business.
How's his fashion going, though?
Well, Everton do look a big price. I think I might get on the phone to my friend William Ho and see if I can catch him after lunch. Okay, moving on to Newcastle, West Ham. I mean, you know, McLaren keeps saying that their performances are better than their results, but, you know, the table doesn't lie. This is going to be a really tough game for them, Drew. I mean, West Ham, Payet's back.
Well, I mean, I love West Ham. I think my first trip down to London, I went to see my auntie when I was about six into West Ham. And I went to see a Hammers game and I thought, oh, fantastic. So I just like them because they're one of these underdogs. But
really friendly fans.
But you have to look at the history of West Ham, you know, from when Redknapp was there, the amount of sort of top quality players that have come out of their youth programme and various other things. They
You're not going to start on about the West Ham way.
No. But I would say they're playing very well at the moment. They're not losing very many games and they're actually up where they belong at fifth. And we're all forever blowing bubbles. So I reckon they're going to win 2-0.
Okay.
Newcastle will come off the rack.
I agree with Drew there. West Ham are going to win this game, no doubt. They're better away than they are at home this season. They've lost two games away only. Going back a bit, Newcastle have not scored in five of their last seven games against West Ham, for a stat there. So I'm going to use West Ham to win this.
He's back. 2-0.
I mean, Newcastle have been gaining in confidence. Interesting to see what Steve McLaren says the score is going to be, because he did predict the 3-3.
They've been gaining in confidence. They've only drawn one.
Yeah, no. Mitrovic even came out. Their striker came out and said he's settling into the Premier League now. He's starting to find his touch. Super Payet, though. I think it's going to be a very close game. I'm going to go for a Desmond.
2-2. Oh, a little bit of a joke there.
That one gets dropped
to
in
fashion.
Every week. I don't know. I really find it hard to believe that the West Ham are such a, you know, Newcastle such a shorter price than West Ham. I fancy West Ham to win this 2-1 to the Hammers. Now then.
But just say, I mean, Steve, just you mentioned earlier, McLaren's job. If they lose this, how do you think he's going to be left with that?
But who are they going to? Who are they going to get in who would be any better than him? I mean, you know, who would want that job at the best of times?
Well,
I mean,
Guardiola said that he's wanting to move to
the Premier League,
so maybe Newcastle will come in.
I mean, I think it depends on
in there as well.
Yeah. How big a contract is McLaren on? Because we know Mike Ashley doesn't like spending money, so if it's too much to sack him, he's not going to sack him, no matter what happens.
He's on the minimum wage because McLaren is
zero-hour
contract.
I'll tell you what, I think Newcastle do have some decent players, and I'll tell you who I think would get them playing well would be Nigel Pearson.
Yeah.
I think he could do a job.
Especially because he did very well with Leicester, and he gave them the foundation which Ranieri's...
Yep.
There's a bit of some sort of fancy dance in there and stuff. You might sort of sort that out a bit, but
assault charges will be getting thrown around.
Anyway, all right. Well, we'll see how Newcastle get on there. Now, Tom. I mean, Liverpool Manchester United was traditionally the biggest game in England for the longest time. I mean, is it still the biggest game in the country, or, you know, has that ship sailed? I mean, it's sixth against ninth.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the past two seasons, their league positions have dropped away. I'm sure the fans will do their utmost to lift to lift Anfield and make it a buzzing atmosphere. It's always
Manchester United atmosphere. Fans probably to literally lift Anfield.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be a great game for the neutral to watch on the spectators. Liverpool seem to have a tendency to raise their game against the bigger teams. They seem to be doing a sort of a Newcastle.
Well, I guess for Liverpool, if you're not really playing for the title or whatever, then these are the little sort of victories you can have, right? These are the moments in your season.
These are your big games.
Yeah, I think Liverpool though are going to do a number on United, and I think reasonably coming. I think in the region, I'm going to go 3-1. To Liverpool.
I agree with Tom. I think Liverpool will beat Man United at home. I don't think Man United's confidence is there. Liverpool are on the up at the moment. They're starting to play a bit better. I go with Liverpool winning.
Okay.
Maybe just 1-0.
Right, Drew, before you answer, I put it to you that if Liverpool beat Manchester United on Sunday, Manchester United will not make the top four.
I would actually agree with that. I think it's correct. I think if Man U don't beat Liverpool, it's going to start to fall away from them. I reckon, I mean, although Man U are up there with possession stats, so are Liverpool. The only problem is Liverpool are actually banging in the chances.
Liverpool had more possession against Arsenal last night.
Yeah,
52%.
And Liverpool have the plan A and plan B option.
Yeah. You
know, Benteke off the bench.
And
come on, Manchester United have a plan B. It's called Marion Fellaini.
Oh,
if you look at the stats, when Fellaini plays, United.
I can't look at stats when I see Fellaini play because of the hair. It's just virtually impossible.
It's the best bonnet in the world.
Do
you know, every single goal he's scored in his life has been offside. His hair's been offside.
His hair's offside before it comes on the pitch. You know,
United get 0.9 points a game when Fellaini plays. When he doesn't play, it's 2 point something.
Yep.
He's a terrible footballer. I don't know how he's a professional footballer. He's terrible.
But I mean, to be honest with you, I think one of the things was it's actually they're just trying to play him out of position, and I think the only position he should be is the bus driver. You know, that's about the only position he's suitable for. But the reason why I really want Liverpool to do well is because I love Klopp's quotes. They are phenomenal. I love the one against Sheffield United. Germans phoning him up saying congratulations in a final, and he'd only just found out it was a two-leg one, and he turned around and says, I mean, can you imagine that? These Germans phoning me up and congratulating me on the final, idiots.
Yeah, he's certainly a good copy, and he's been a breath of fresh air. I mean, I just think with the specific way that he wants to play, you're going to get these erratic performances, because some weeks it's going to click, other weeks it's not, so you don't really know what you're going to get. I'm going to have to sit on the fence here and go with a draw 1-1. Drew?
For Liverpool, I reckon, if I'm honest, I reckon Liverpool will win, but I've just got this sneaky feeling that Van Gaal always seems to find a way. He'll get out of it, and he'll probably win quite comfortably.
I mean, okay. All right, well, we will see how that one pans out. It's certainly one for us to stay up for in Singapore. Now, Arsene Wenger last night was definitely half glass full rather than half glass empty. But he's got to go to Stoke. Arsenal with, you know, lots of bad memories of that place. I mean, guys, can they get over the hump here, Tom? Can they finally get a win there?
I think Arsenal have got enough quality now, yeah, to go there.
Quality's never been the issue, it's always been character.
But with Stoke changing the way they play, they've gone from this everybody over 6'2", let's bully everyone off to the park, to the few, you know, nice flair players that they do have in the likes of Bojan, Shaqiri,
Adam.
Arnautovic.
Adam.
but the only problem I'd say with Stoke is that if Stoke are going to go and try and play football against Arsenal, the front players that they have aren't as good as the front players that Arsenal have.
Yes, but I Stoke still have that solid back.
Unless,
line.
Of course, Walcott's playing.
And Super Jack Butland in goal. You know, to me, he should be England's number one. Super Jack Butland in goal.
Have you got a man crush on Butland?
It's a good fashion sense.
He's a good goalkeeper.
He's very, very good goalkeeper. He's an absolute beast of a man when it comes to physical size.
He has got a man crush on him.
You've just convinced everyone around the table.
What you can't see, unfortunately, is the eyes lighting up when he's a beast.
I'm going to go again. against the grain, I think Stoke are going to nick it 1-0. And they've done very well against the other big teams at the Britannia this season, so I think Stoke 1-0.
Jeremy, you're probably taking Stoke to win about 5-0, are you?
Stoke only lost once against Arsenal, the last seven at home. Bit of stat there for you, stats. Arsenal played pretty well away this season until they got slaughtered 4-0 by Southampton a few weeks ago. But I will go for Stoke, 1-0.
Well done.
Okay, Drew?
I agree with Jeremy, not very often, but I agree. I've agreed with everything you've said today. It's fantastic. I reckon that Stoke, the one thing that Arsenal has done for whatever reason this season, they don't seem to be a possession-based team. I mean, you look at Liverpool.
Well, that started last year.
Yeah, they basically
the away games to Manchester United and Liverpool last year.
They only had about 30-odd possession this time, yet it was 3-3, they had as many shots, chances, it was phenomenal sort of like change of tactics, and maybe that's something to turn him around. However, I don't think he's ever quite come across the physicality issue, and the problem is with Stoke's probably one of the most physical teams out there. So, and then a winter's night, I think they're just going to get bullied off the park.
Come on, so what's the result?
I reckon it'll be 5-0. I'm going to go with another repeat.
Could this be just
Charlie Adam from the halfway line alone against Chelsea?
Okay, well, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go 2-0 to Arsenal with Giroud and Ramsey to score the goals.
Oh.
Now, it's quiz time.
Pens down.
Now, I heard someone...
Get off that.
I heard someone prattling on earlier about Arsenal's invincible season of 03-04. So this first question, if Jeremy can put his phone down... because there's no internet allowed.
Oh. Turn it over. You can't call a friend either.
Now, Arsenal's invincible 03-04 season. So this question you're allowed to sort of think about and digest through the length of the quiz. Their final game, they won against Leicester 2-1, I think after going down by a goal. Name their starting lineup.
The what? David Seaman in goal.
Nope. 03-04.
Oh, really? Sorry.
Lehmann.
Yep.
Adams would have played centre-half.
Nope, he was long gone.
Was he?
Long gone.
Okay, we have...
Okay, I'm going to go Henri.
Henri. You got Henri, yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp.
Mark
no.
Pires.
Long gone. Pires, yeah.
Vieira.
Yeah. It's not as hard as you think.
Cole left back. Cole, the
Chelsea yes, legend. Yeah.
Ashley Cole,
yes.
Yeah,
that's got me.
Right back would have been
Campbell.
Campbell, yep. I'm mentally keeping score who's got most of these right. No, mate. He was long gone, mate. He'd already been and gone from Chelsea by then.
I'm a Spurs supporter.
You're like
Sylvain Wiltord?
Nope, long gone. You're missing one, two,
four.
You're missing the right back. Campbell's centre half partner. Vieira's midfield partner.
Really?
And right midfield. Anyway, we'll come back to that. You've got four to get. Now, okay, 2012.
Indeed. Yeah.
2012. Sergio Aguero scored an injury time winner, 94th minute. Yeah. I think we all know that, mate. 94th minute to win the title for City. But who scored the first injury time goal for City that
Dudek.
Day?
Dudek.
Who?
Dudek.
Jerzy Dudek, the Liverpool keeper.
No. The Man City guy, the Croatian. Dudek.
Bosnian.
Bosnian, that's good. Yeah. Dudek.
He's now at Roma.
Stojovic.
Djonovic.
No, he's now at...
Daldek.
Dzeko.
Darek.
Edins.
That's what it was! Come on! I wish it was close.
Wrong country.
Anyway, Tom gets the point.
No.
Now, who can you? Anyone remember who scored the first goal for QPR that day?
Barton.
Can you?
Oh, sorry. No, sorry. Not for City. Sorry. Not for QPR. Sorry. For City.
Milner.
Yaya.
No, you're just guessing.
Silva.
Zabaleta.
Oh, that was the next guy I was going to say.
And, okay, a little easy bonus question. Who got sent off for QPR that day?
Barton.
Hey, I got that first!
I'll give it in this.
All right, now, let's go back to May 1995, and West Ham denied Manchester United on the final day, and Blackburn won the league. But who performed the heroics and goal that day?
For West Ham?
Yep.
Shaka Hislop.
Club legend.
Is that what guy?
David James.
James.
Nope.
The one, Czech guy.
No, it's Pavel Cernacek. He's a Newcastle legend. This is West Ham.
Give us a clue.
He is Czech, I think. Certainly Eastern European. I think he went on to be the goalkeeping coach at West Ham. He's forever tied with West Ham. And you still have to get the Arsenal right back, centre back, right midfield, and centre midfield.
I'm a little bit lost.
Can we have nationalities on the Arsenal?
Okay, team? I'll give you a clue on the West Ham. The West Ham fans used to sing Ludo, Ludo.
Oh, Ludo McCloskey.
Ludo McCloskey, there you go. Yeah. Okay, now, Alan Shearer's goals famously took Blackburn to the title that year, but how many winners' medals has he won in his illustrious career? One is correct, that year. Now, now, how many Premiership winners' medals does Kaolo Touré have?
Three, yeah.
You're all going with three?
Two.
Tom gets the...
Oh, you said three and then you questioned
that.
You can't do that. That's geared on the answer.
2003-04 with Arsenal, the Invincibles, and 2011-12. He's the same amount of title medals as David May.
Touré. I thought it was Kaolo Touré.
Now, 2004-2005, Chelsea won the league with a record 95 points. They only lost one game. Who beat them?
Manu.
Wigan.
No.
West Ham.
No.
Tottenham.
Any raises on any of that?
Sunderland.
No. Manchester City.
Oh, that was close. On
the 16th of October, they won 1-0. It was a penalty. Who scored it? Anyone?
What year was this?
2004.
Robinho.
Barton.
Miles out. Robinho arrived about 2008.
Barton.
Nope.
Hugh? No.
Nicholas Anelka.
Oh, Nicky Anelka.
Now, Arsenal 1991 won the league and they lost only one game. But who did they lose to?
Manu.
Man City.
Fulham.
West Ham.
Chelsea 2-1 at Stamford Bridge. Now, 1991 was a very, very dramatic season. Can you name me four other seismic events that happened that season?
In
1991.
Yeah. Three of them are around Arsenal, the champions.
They only lost one game.
Well, three of them are relating to Arsenal, and the other is relating to their biggest title challenger. And you still need to get the Arsenal right back, centre back, central midfielder, and right midfielder.
91. Is that the bottom of 91, or am I way out there?
No.
No, it's Arsenal.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, so there's three events relating to Arsenal and one relating to the team that came second.
Tony Adams got done for drink driving.
That is one, correct, Jeremy. And the double points for these ones because these are hard.
He got 6 months.
Ian Wright, did he arrive from Palace?
Nope.
Wenger? Something to do with Wenger?
No, long year, miles out. Years out.
91. Well,
I'm still in nappies.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Runners up were Liverpool.
Right.
So something seismic happened to Liverpool.
Oh, Grobbelaar, match fixing.
No. Okay, we're going to have some dead air otherwise. I'm going to have to...
Unbelievable.
Going to have to hurry you.
These are tough.
Okay, well, look. Okay. In the first half of the season, there was the famous Arsenal-Manchester United brawl.
The pizzas!
Points deductions. No, that pizza game was... This was the one with Brian McClair, Nigel Winterburn, the big one. First time they'd been deducted points. And United also beat Arsenal 6-2 in the League Cup, one of the most famous games of that decade. And with regard to Liverpool, Kenny Dalglish resigned and the title running after was it the 4-4 with Everton in the FA Cup?
Yes.
Okay, now that season, 1991, which England striker made his debut for Arsenal that season?
Ian Wright.
Which future England striker, I should say?
Ian Wright?
Nope.
Campbell. Francis Jeffers?
Nope.
Smith?
Alan Smith.
Jeffers.
This is such a good question. I'm feeling really... If I could show my smugness on air, I really would.
Is Lee Dixon the right back, just so we don't have any dead air?
No, long gone. Long gone. Okay, I'll give you a clue. The right back was Cameroonian. The missing midfielder is Brazilian.
Danielson?
Nope. And if I give you the... Well, actually, sorry. The right back and the central defender are both... one's Cameroonian, one's Ivory Coast. The central midfielder is Brazilian, and the right winger is Scandinavian. And it's not Anders Limpar, because you had by 20 years. Now, anyway, which England striker? Which future England striker?
1991, future England striker, played for Arsenal.
It's a bit of a sneaky question. It's actually a very sneaky question, this.
It's not Jeffers.
No, you're not going to get
funny
it.
Jeffers.
Will I put you out of your misery?
Yeah.
Andy Cole.
Really?
No.
I thought it was with Newcastle.
No, yeah, later, because then he went to Bristol. He ended up Bristol City, then Newcastle, and then...
Good pull out the bag there.
Okay, now, who won the title the following season, 91-92?
Leeds.
Leeds it was, correct.
They got cut by Rangers in the next in the European Cup. Hey!
And that season, 91-92, who was the division's top scorer?
Lee Dixon, no.
29 goals.
Lee Dixon, you
guys. No, the boy that played with Chelsea, what was his name? Lee something, no, it wasn't him.
No
one,
no.
29 goals, demo.
29 goals.
92 Zola, Hughes?
No. England striker?
Shearer.
29 goals, no.
No.
Owen? No, Lineker? He only did it once.
Oh, Robbie Fowler.
You've already mentioned him.
Wright.
Ian Wright, yes, correct. But scored the goals for Palace and Arsenal. So we've got four Arsenal players to find. A right back, a centre back, central midfielder, and a right midfielder. This is from the 03-04 season. Right, the centre back was the answer was mentioned in one of the other questions. There's two Premiership medals.
Touré.
Paolo Touré, yeah. Really? The right back, Cameroonian. Converted right winger.
No.
Good player. Lauren.
Lauren.
Laurent.
Laurent.
No. Central midfielder. Brazilian. World Cup winner.
Zico. Socrates. Pele.
Defensive midfielder.
Tall guy. Dark hair.
I think he went to play in Greece. Yeah. I think he went to play in Greece afterwards.
I don't know.
No, Gilberto Silva.
Silva!
And then the right winger, Scandinavian, went on to play for West Ham.
Was he the guy with the broken back, Klaus?
No, he had some really good Barnetts on the way. Really good goal scorer. Decent player.
Lindegaard.
Oh,
but Lingard.
Lee is a good start.
Yeah, you're right. I know who you mean. I know you have it.
I don't know.
Freddie Lindegaard.
I met him in Italy.
All right, that takes us to the end of the quiz. Deary me, that was painful. Now, I have to
should have asked on
to judge a winner.
Come on.
Judging from the animation and the fact that he's looking so resplendent in his overalls,
yeah!
Who wins the quiz?
That's it. Fashion sense, Tom. You need to get some. Yeah.
All right, that takes us to the end of today's pod. I'm your host, Steve McBain, and we'll be back next week. A big thanks to Mr. Drew O'Donnell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Jeremy Searle.
Thank you, Steve.
And Mr. Tom Warren.
Thank you very much, guys.
And we'll be back the same place, same time next week. Cheers.